welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name is Kevin Appleby. And today, Graham, we've got a very interesting guest all the way from New York City, but originally from Hong Kong.
Yeah, I kind of read a little bit of his background, and I was thinking, he knows, he just knows everything. He's he's so into everything, and we can ask him anything. He's a bit like having AI as a guest. He's an LLM. He's not really. His name is Jason Wong. Jason, welcome to the next 100 Days podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Jason, I think you better give us a quick guide or tour through that great story that Graham's talking about.
Yeah, my name is Jason. I was born in Hong Kong, and I came to America when I was 8. I was working in all sorts of odd jobs growing up as a kid, and I just fell in love with doing business online. I discovered the internet when I was young, and I fortunately or unfortunately got access to a laptop at a very young age. So I was just dabbling online, learning how to make a dollar. And so when I was 12 years old, I started selling things on eBay. And by the time I was 14, I had my own internet store, selling things online to strangers all over the world. And that's really how my career started, was selling things online.
How did your teachers at the time react to this entrepreneur in their class?
They didn't really understood it. I didn't really disclose it. You know, I was still doing great in school. And I mean, some might tell that I wasn't paying too much attention because I was working. I had my laptop out. Instead of taking notes, I was on the internet working. I might fall asleep during class because I was working late night talking to China. I was 15 years old working with Chinese manufacturers. And so I'll stay up very late night and then go to school at 7. So, you know, some teachers could tell.
Yeah, I'm sure they did, but they must be mightily proud of you and your achievements today, because you're still a young man, and yet you've crammed so much into your career so far. One thing I want to talk about is memes, and you created a holy meme Bible, which you've made a fair bit of money from. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that was 2016. At the time, I was running an internet blog, which, you know, not that prevalent nowadays, but back in the day, that was where you would make content. And I was sharing all sorts of internet jokes, memes, trends. And I realized that no one's really capitalizing on this trend. Most people were maybe at most putting a picture on a t-shirt and call it a day. But I realized that there is actually a larger market and an appetite for this. So I made a coloring book of the internet's most popular memes of that year. And so another way to think about it, it's kind of like a yearbook, right? 2016, what was the best things that happened of that year? And so I made a coloring book, but the cool thing was it didn't exist. I just Photoshopped it. I Photoshopped a version of what the coloring book would look like. And I posted onto my blog. And the first day I did $4,000. Second day I did $7,000. Third day I did, I think, $10,000 or $11,000, and of a book that doesn't exist. It was just a picture. And so by the end of the week, I had $250,000 of revenue sitting in Shopify with no book that exists. And so I was like, okay, well, I better start working on this. Well, the cool thing is all the designs are made already. I just had to go find a print shop to make it, which, you know, you guys are aware of. It's not rocket science. It's just a print and binding and then ship it out. So we were very fortunate. When I say we, it was just me in my one bedroom shipping it all out. I think I was shipping out 23,000 books in a week by myself. It was an interesting week for sure.
And you had
in a bedroom sleeping on top of a pile of 23,000 books.
It was in my closet in the hallway. I had a bed at least, but at some point there was no bed. It was on top of my bed. But that's the beauty of business, you know, that you got to start somewhere.
What a fantastic, if you like. Well, that was just one thing that you did. Mm-hmm. But if you take yourself forward 10 years now, mm-hmm. to where you are right now, what's occupying your business career right now?
Yeah, so over the last 10 years, I've started a number of different consumer brands. I was selling anything online. I just love selling. I sold things that people put in their bathroom, people that put in their, I sold shower caddies. I've sold candles. I've sold anything you can think of. And ultimately, I realized that I just really like making things. So, about a few years ago, I took all the money that I made and I bought a couple factories in China. instead of selling a product, I want to make the products that people sell. And so, I bought two factories in China. One was making packaging, paper packaging, and the other one was making plastics packaging. And you're probably wondering, like, what is this guy doing making packaging? Like, what is there to make about packaging? And it was a question that I had for myself too. And it was a realization that I had that every single thing that I ever sold in my life had packaging in it. It doesn't matter if you're buying toothbrush, toothpaste, or a TV, it came in some sort of packaging. And so I realized that it was actually better selling shuffles than trying to sell and go for the gold rush. So that's why I'm in packaging and I love it here.
So you have people come to you and say, "Package this for me."
In some sort of way, yes. They usually come to me with saying, "Hey, I want to make some improvement to my packaging," or "I don't have any packaging right now and I want to make something new." And I think it's a trend of social media. When you're seeing things on the internet, the thing that catches your eyes is the first unboxing moment, right? And also, I think it's being pushed by people buying more things online, but also people will always buy things in retail shops. When you're walking into a retail store, the first thing that you see is a box. You don't see the stuff inside. You don't even know what it smells like. The box tells you what it smells like, right? And so it's the retail, it's the online, it's the social media, everything combined together that has this driving force behind packaging.
Were these factories expensive then, or are you still paying that off, or is this just, here's the cash, it's mine now?
I bought a percentage of the factory. I didn't buy the full factory,
Okay.
particularly because I don't want to run a factory. I
No.
want to own the factory, but I don't want to run it.
Right.
I know how to modernize it. A lot of factories are not modernized, right? When you think about a factory, it's a little warehouse with a few assembly lines and 100 people working there. They're not modernized at all. And so when I went into these businesses, I took what I understand about AI, what I understand about technology, what I understand about running business at scale, and I modernize those businesses so that we're running more efficiently, we're doing things at a lower cost, and we're integrating technology in our processes that are traditionally not being integrated. Like factories are 20 some years behind on technology, and we're one of the few that are really taking advantage of what we're seeing right now with AI.
Is location a factor, or was it a factor in terms of the choice of the factories that you went with?
Absolutely. We're based in Shenzhen, which is an hour north of Hong Kong. We're near all the major ports. We supply to a lot of local manufacturers in Shenzhen. You guys are aware of it, you know?
So you, I mean, a really smart investment. So you can package anything. You're becoming a packaging guru, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
And so for that reason, people are finding you out. I guess in a way, it's like a golden ticket because, as you say, packaging is a feature of everything.
Everything's
And it means that you're, I was right at the beginning, Kevin. He is like an LLM. He's like the packaging, everything that is made, everything that needs to be designed needs packaging. It needs Jason Wong. So, I maybe this is isn't this a really smart move that you've made, Jason?
I think so. I think it's a win for everyone. Our clients are saving money. They love working with us. We love working with our clients. And ultimately, I get to scratch that itch of making products. I realize that I just like making things. I'm a, in my head, I like to build things in my head. And this gives me an ability to work on so many different products, so many different brands across different verticals all at once. So ultimately, it's a win for me. I love it.
And do these people who come along to you, do they say, "Jason, do you want to take a share of this?" Or do you say, "I wouldn't mind taking a share of that"?
So here's the interesting thing. The factory that we bought a piece of was my supplier for the last 8 years
Okay.
across my brands. So when I had something to package, I went to this person. And so we had a very good relationship already. And ultimately, what happened was I went to them during a time where business was a little slower for them. And I said, "Hey, where are majority of your business coming from?" And they said, "Domestic. We don't really know how to speak English. We don't know how to reach the clients in the EU. We don't know how to reach the clients in the US, but we know how to make things." And so I said, "Okay, great. What would you say if I bring you three times the business that you're doing right now?" right? What if I can expand your audience to Australia, EU, United States? Can I get a piece of the company? And they said, sure, let's give it a try. And in the first 6 months, I did just that. I brought them all sorts of clients that they would have never gotten. And that opened the door for me to buy the rest of my shares in the factory, was I had to prove myself first. And then I bought my shares.
Well, what made you so confident that their packaging products at that point you were going to be able to sort of 3x what they were doing? I mean, yeah, there's a hell of a lot of business outside of where they were. It's not just domestic China, but basically there's a lot more business. Was it simply that that was the bet that you figured that I've got enough contacts out there to bring them some business? Tell us
That's
more about that.
precisely it. Yeah, I mean, I have a marketing background. On top of being able to make things, I was a marketer because I knew how to sell things online. And so when I look at that business, I realized that it was extremely underutilized. They had a lot of manpower, they had a lot of resources, but it was underutilized because these people do not know how to acquire customers. And so I was very confident going in and say, hey, I know I can grow this business by 3x. And just through the Rolodex of contacts I had as a operator for the last decade, I made a lot of friends who will love to save some money on packaging. So I reached out to them. Our first 50 clients were friends of mine.
Yeah, I know that you only said Rolodex because of we're too old for that. So basically, you don't really have a Rolodex, do you? You just have a mobile phone with all these people on it.
Might be for you, Graham, but I've never used a Rolodex. I don't know what one is.
Oh, I think I had one for a very short period in the 80s, but not now. But
Jason,
I'd like to think I had one though, because it's really cool, don't you think? Yeah, good.
I think it's fantastic. I saw on TV once. I was like, you just flip through it. Something mechanical about it.
Kevin, go on, you were going to say something.
Jason, you're investing in factories in China. Now, we're hearing all the time in the news about tariffs, massive new costs in your business. How's that affecting you?
I mean, when it first came out back in April of 2025, when Trump said that we're going to start tariffing everyone, including China, and most importantly, China, it was difficult because all our clients got scared away. They're like, we don't want to do business with people with factories in China. We're getting taxed 155%. We don't want that. So it was kind of shaky. But then, as all things happened with Trump, he went back on his words and we clawed some of that back. And then ultimately, our clients realized that even with the tariffs, they're still saving money. That's a crazy thing. After they did the calculations, they realized that manufacturing in the United States was still more expensive than if they were to pay the tariff on the Chinese goods. Because for the last 30 some years, China has been the manufacturing superpower, right? Americans have outsourced most of their work. And so if you outsource your work for the last 30 years, you're not fixing that overnight by putting tariffs in it. There's no manufacturing jobs coming back overnight. It will take over a decade for you to reestablish the foundations for it, right? And so after all, we're still competitive on rates. And so after the tariff got brought down, our clients came back. But even if it didn't get brought down, we're still cheaper.
I'm a big Trump fan. I think they'll write about him in another 30 years and say smartest thing he's ever done. It's the smartest thing he's ever done, because he needed to bring back manufacturing, and he's the kind of president, whether you like him or lump him, it's going to get somebody else to pay for it.
I agree. I think for you to make any major policy changes, you need to put down a big hammer. And I think that's what Trump is doing, right? Like, so when we're talking about like, yeah, he's got to claw back on his words on whatnot, he had to make that statement. Like the way that if you read his book, right, the way that he negotiates, he shoots very, very, very high, and he meets you where he wanted to go in the first place. He didn't want 150%, right? So if you read his books, you understand why he is the way that he is.
So it's something that I think it's really I think it's a really well I think he's a really smart president, and I don't think you've in America I don't think you've been blessed with too many in the recent past. But basically, I think that right now, though, from a manufacturing point of view, China is still number one, and you probably will be for some time. Is there a Can you see a way in which there's almost a détente, something where there's going to be, an acceptance that they've got to work in the world that makes people not so much love China, but like working with them.
I mean, I hope for that. You know, I hope that we understand what our strengths and weaknesses are. You know, like China's only where it is because America gave it so much opportunity back in the 70s and 80s for manufacturing. You know, we were a farmland for a majority of the time. And so I think in my hope is that there's cooperation. There are things that we're really good at. I don't think you'll make an iPhone in the United States anytime soon. We're really good at making that.
Well,
But
they're talking about getting rid of the iPhone now, aren't they? And going to some sort of weird device that you pin on your lapel or something. I suspect the next iteration won't be an iPhone. It'll be
No.
something AI driven. And somebody told me the other day, I'm just about to buy a new Tesla Model Y, and somebody said you get free grok in it. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I can imagine driving down and having conversations with Grok about, what's the capital of Kazakhstan, and whatever it is. I don't know whether that's true or not, but
Yeah, it is. It is. I was just driving a Tesla on a road trip the other day, and you can have a full conversation with Grok with a button on your steering wheel.
wow. Well,
You sure it's not grog that the Navy used to serve to the sailors?
no, it's Grok, Kevin. But what can I say? For me, I think the world's got so many positive things to get behind right now. But AI, I think, will wipe away so many jobs. Will it wipe away a lot of Chinese manufacturing jobs?
I think it'll be difficult in short term. There's definitely a lot of automation and manufacturing in electronics right now at large scale. A lot of cars are being made with AI and robotics. A lot of cell phones and a lot of microchips are being made with robotics. But for the business that we're in terms of packaging, it's quite difficult because there's just something about your fingers touch that can fold boxes that robotics cannot do. So I think eventually it will be. You know, I like to be realistic about that. But in near term, while I'm alive, I probably will have a job for a while.
Oh, I think no. You'll never have a job. You'll just be doing things, and I doubt you'll ever work for anyone else. But you might well employ a heck of a lot of people, or maybe a lot of robots.
Sure. That's actually precisely what I'm building right now. I'm building a army of AI agents to do various work for me. You guys have heard of Claude and Claudebot and all that good stuff. I'm in a process of building that team of helping me with various tasks that doesn't make sense for me to do and doesn't make sense for me to hire humans to do. And so you're right. That's happening right now.
Yeah,
So
it is. Give us some examples of that, Jason.
sure.
What sort
So
of writing?
Claudebot is a new program that came out by I saw on Twitter a guy named Steven, I believe. And it's basically AI agents that can execute tasks for you 24/7. So imagine having a little intern that can research the news for you every single day and come back and say, "Hey, Kevin, Graham, here's what happened, and then here's how it's relevant to your business. And if you want me to take actions on any of these, take it." And so some people are using it for stock trading. Oh, here's all the news that we missed out, or comb through Facebook, comb through TikTok, see what are the brands that are up and coming right now, and buy stocks for me. And the AI agent will be able to trade the stocks for you, buy and sell, and do all sorts of good stuff. What we're doing is we're doing a lot of research using our AI agents. So we're getting our agents to comb through TikToks to understand what are the trends right now for content. Because for our business, we actually get a lot of our business through making content and, you know, getting people to see our videos and come to us. And so we have agents doing that. And then we have agents that are more like admin, personal admin stuff. I'll have the agents go and call for reservations for me, call and do a hold for an hour for me before transferring over to me. You know, there's a lot of things that I don't want to do anymore that our agents are doing. I have an agents that are combing through my books, going through every single line items and helping me classify them before sending it over to a CPA. There's a lot of stuff.
Wow, there's so much going on there, and I'm impressed by your application there. The opportunity for you with when it comes to AI, I mean, how great do you think it's going to be? How much impact do you think it's going to have in your business within, say, 12 months?
I think there will be a drastic impact to our business in terms of our efficiency in the next 12 months. I don't think the manufacturing side will be too drastically changed. We might employ, you know, AI detections for fraud and like defects, damages. We'll have cameras across our assembly line to catch that, but that's not changing a business overnight. What will change your business overnight is we're going to equip every single person that is working with our clients. So think of like front desk people, the concierge, the our managers who are talking to your clients, equipping them with what I call like an Iron Man suit. You know, when you watch Robert Downey Jr. with the Iron Man suit, he just has a screen for everything. He understands what's going on. He understands in real time how things happen. We're going to equip our team members with that, with an Iron Man suit, so they can work more efficiently and our clients can get what they need to get done at a much faster pace. That I think will change our business.
Is give us an idea of the kind of clients that deal with you right now. I mean, they did you say that they're advertising on things like TikTok and
We work with national brands, international brands, and even your regular TikTok brand. So we work with, you know, Vita Coco, the coconut water company. We do their shopping bags.
okay.
We work with Quest Bars, you know, the protein bar company. We do their boxes. And then we also work with regular brands that you might see on Facebook, you might see on TikTok. You know, all these social media, they have a lot of brands coming up. We work with them too. So the challenge with manufacturing is that when we work with our clients, a lot of them don't know what they want. That's really where the bottleneck is, right? Right, Kevin and Graham, if you guys tell me you want exactly this box that's red and that's 4 inches, it's square, and you want something inside that say a certain message. If you know exactly what you want, my job would be 1,000% easier. But the challenge is most of our clients don't know exactly what they want. They kind of come to us to talk about, let's work on figuring out what we want to make. And that takes a lot of time. And that's really why we need an LOM for all our team members, because we want to be able to reply immediately. We have all these suggestions. We can visualize what it looks like for you through an AI image generator. Right now, there's no tools for that, but we're building that for our own team.
I love the idea of an Iron Man suit. I mean, Kevin's always wanted one of them. But you know, what can I say? I've got this thought in mind. One of the things that I do is I help people market to the affluent. So basically, people come, and you put in into ChatGPT who knows most about UK high net worth data. You find me, and that basically we start a conversation. I've got various clients. And one of the things I've always thought I'd love to be able to do is to send a sort of a Dan Kennedy shock and awe box. So you produce the box and you put certain things in it. Now I can do a number of them in the UK, and you put various things into the box and then they're shipped to high net worth people right around the world to their personal home addresses. That would effectively they weren't expecting them, but they got them. And what is inside the box is something of value to them. Some maybe it's a book, maybe it's a gift, maybe it's a report, whatever it is of value to them because they've been isolated because of maybe an interest in whatever it is. It strikes me that in my armory right now, I have the opportunity to send an email, which has variable levels of success, a personal direct mail, a real direct mail letter, maybe a telephone call. They all have limitations. If I was to go through a TikTok, my audience just wouldn't be there. Well, they might be, but they wouldn't identify themselves. So basically, the one of the most successful ways is to actually send a shock and awe box, which is a box of goodies. It doesn't have to be that big. It might be like a letter box size thing, but it's still, you did it and they weren't expecting it. And it has that kind of level of obligation that goes with it.
100%.
If I had 50,000 of those built or made by you, is that the sort of thing that you could do at a reasonable price?
Absolutely. That's right up our alley.
Really?
But Graham, you don't have 50,000 people to send them to.
Oh no, we do. No, we do. I mean, because if you think about high net worth individuals right around the world, you know, and it's not everybody wants right around the world, but like the Middle East or the you know, Europe and Australia, all kinds of places, there's more than enough people, and they don't have to be super wealthy. They just have to be wealthy enough to take the next step that the client wants them to take, and it strikes me that I've never really been able to find the right kind of mass solution. And just to give you some sort of context, Jason, the sort of typical rate for these things, including postage, it numbers 20, 30, 40, 50 quid. What's that in dollars? Almost, not quite double it, but $80. And you think each. Now, I don't, it just is the maths of it doesn't work out. But having a packaging genius that can fulfill the right things into that box and then distribute them, presumably it's not the first time you'll have done this, but maybe it is. I don't know.
We can actually ship it directly to the clients from our facility. So instead of shipping 50,000 products to you in the UK and then shipping it out to everyone else around the world, which you got to be shipping double, we can ship it directly to the clients for you. And we can create the goods for you inside a box. We can pack it for you, and it will look exactly like it came from you.
Well, this is a conversation that maybe I'm sorry, Kevin, it's gone from podcast to a personal I'd love to be able to have that conversation with you separately and basically figure out what that means for certain clients. Because I've got a I just had a conversation about an hour or two ago and with a client who has an amazing new technology, absolutely amazing in the medical tech business area. And it's got worldwide opportunities, worldwide. And there's a particular demographic, there's a particular technical set of skills who would be interested in this. And the thing that the CEO said to me, they said, they just don't know it exists. They just don't know it exists. And if that was, I'm looking for a place for them to be able to get it right out there very quickly. And maybe you're the answer to that, Jason. And forgive me for anybody out there listening to this. I do forgive me a little bit of self-indulgence, but genuinely, the opportunity to bring marketing messages to people right around the world, in the sort of shape of a shock and awe box. The shock and awe box being a box of goodies of some sort that explains a particular offer, or it gives them of some value or potential value as an investor, for instance, or as a user. I think it might be an area that we can explore.
Brad, this
100%.
shows the power of the modern world. You've got a young man in New York City who owns a substantial share of production resources in China, who can provide that sort of service. You layer on top of that the AI that's smoothing the whole pipeline. You've got something very, very powerful there.
From my point of view, I've literally got two clients right now, as I'm a small business, and I've got two clients now with, I want to say, world-beating med tech solutions. I'm not a med tech focused business. They just happen. It's a bit like London buses. The idea of London buses, they all turn up at once. But the whole idea of both of them, it's just I want them both to succeed real quickly. But there needs to be some way of leveraging it. And the best thing that I can offer in my armor is a shock and awe box, because I know it's got the most power. Because it sort of says you care. It can carry a lot more information in there. It can carry something of a not a gross incentive, not something, is a bribe, but it's something of value, and it makes you look great. And I think that for me.
It's always exciting to have something interesting drop through under the front doormat.
And packaging is a very, very powerful way for you to create a different perception of the message that you're trying to push out. I was just talking to a client from the UK right before this call, and he came to me and said, "Hey, I sell a high-end jewelry brand, but my packaging doesn't tell people that it's a high-end packaging brand. You're spending so much money on this piece of jewelry, but the packaging doesn't tell you that it's at that price." And so we're working together to create the perception of high-value product that goes along with the high-value product, but the box is really the problem. And people don't realize that, but the box is the first impression that you make with your clients. Just as when you're buying an iPhone, right? When you buy an iPhone box, it feels expensive. When you're opening that box, it feels like you're buying a $1,000electronic. And you have seen a fair share of cheaper electronics, and the boxes do not show that the same standards. And so, I think it goes to your point is that it really can send a powerful message depending on how you intentionally design for it. And I think, packaging is one of those things that people don't think about. It's an afterthought. But now I hopefully people listen to this podcast and they realize that it's really the first impression that you make, and it's a very, very powerful message you can create.
I'm super
Definitely a powerful message. And I'm just holding this up in front of the camera at the moment, a little device that I had to buy to extend my network as well.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, but no, very nice package. Looks good. Tells you a lot about the product. The only problem I've got with this is I've opened it up. I've taken the device outside. This is going outside in the trash next. What a shame.
Well, I guess there is that. That's, but how else, what's the parallel in life that if I could get the very best salesperson or the very best person who can introduce these ideas to people right around the world, and they had I don't know, 2 or 3 minute period where they're all their attention is focused on this piece of packaging with bits in it. How much would that person be worth? How much would those that army be worth? How much would, from certain businesses who want to scale extraordinarily fast, and without giving away the details of the company, they were talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, as a sort of an exit sort of level for people to get their return and so forth. And that I genuinely think it's these sorts of opportunities that would potentially lift them into a different stratosphere. Because I do know this one of these people has something that is incredible but not well known. And I've got to say, they would fit very, very well without talking about the detail into something that you could produce. But sorry, I've allowed my business to take over the podcast, and I forgive me. But Jason, I mean, you're still a young man. You've got lots of clients. You've been trading since you were a very young child. What's next for you?
I think this is a business that, out of everything I've built so far, this is the business that has the highest growth potential for life-changing money. I didn't come from much. We're my mom and I were immigrants to a new country. I want this business to be the one that changes the trajectory of our family's life. So, I'll be doing this for as long as I can, and maybe hopefully for a meaningful exit that can take care of my family. And then afterwards, probably build something new. I just love building things, so never stop building. But what we're building right now on the manufacturing side, I think it's very exciting because we're building our own AI, we're building our own agents, we're building our own platform that encompasses the entire packaging world. So it will be another marathon that I need to run. So right now, I'm not thinking too much about what's next. It's how do I take what I have right now and change it into a gigantic conglomerate, if you will.
I can see this happening, Kevin. I looked at your website, which I don't know if it's absolutely yours. This is Mentor Pass. Is this something to do with you?
No. It's packingduck.com.
Okay, so we're calling it Packing Dot.
I've got to ask you, Jason, where did that name Packing Duck come from?
As you guys are aware, Peking duck is a famous dish from China. It's a duck dish, and I love to play on names. I thought that was a very interesting way for me to do marketing for myself, so I changed the E to an A, packing, so it sounds like packaging, packing duck. And there's a mascot to it. People love mascots. It's easy to remember. It's fun. But I think the core reason why I changed to this name is because most manufacturing names are boring. Most manufacturing names are, Shenzhen Paper Limited Co. or, something along those lines. It's not fun. People don't remember it. And so I wanted to create something that feels welcoming. It feels warm. It feels like it's approachable, and ultimately we're able to deliver on all the types of services that we can deliver on. And it's a fun place for people to do business with. There's really no downsides to it.
Yeah, I love the site. I was struggling with packing, Kevin. Sorry, I was putting a C in it because clearly you don't know how to spell.
Well, that changed from Peking duck to Peking duck. And it's funny, I thought that, and then I thought, hang on a minute, I can't just go with that as a joke because I've got a man from Hong Kong here. That's going to sound very racist. It turns out to be the right
Okay,
story.
you're
Yeah,
right.
it's just the opportunities that you've got with packaging, and actually with packaging, one of the things you have to be is pretty good at origami, don't you? Because when it comes to actually getting the boxes and the packaging to fit together, that must be a real skill. Presumably you have people who are just good at that.
Absolutely, we have the best.
Yeah.
But it's really the technology that we deployed that allows us to do these things efficiently at scale. You
Yeah.
know, ultimately, it's the foundation that we create that allows our team members to work faster. So, like, if you're just thinking about a regular person folding boxes, it's gonna take them a million years to fold any meaningful amount. But we
Yeah.
have the right machines that we deploy, the right processes that we set up, so that people can work as efficiently as possible. So anyone, including yourself, both of you can come onto the assembly line and be able to fold the box very easily.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Kevin would love to do that job because he's up for that. A trip to China and
Trip to
fold a few
China,
boxes.
just do something that can switch brain off and don't have to think about it when I go home from the office. It's
It's a long way home from the office, though. But
well,
I what
I
I Kevin,
That's a long way home from the office. That is very true, Graham.
it is so. What I'd like to do to sort of to wrap things up a little bit here, Jason, is that you are a packaging expert. You are a kind of social media expert. You've dealt with things like memes. You are a bit like a Renaissance man. You basically have you know how what I mean? Effectively, people at certain times of their in certain areas, like Elon Musk, is definitely the businesses that he's not necessarily created himself, but he runs and he's developed and so forth. It makes him an unusual person. Are you a bit like Elon Musk?
I like to think so. I think we work in very similar ways. He's a man of great ideas, and he likes to work on multiple businesses, which is what I like to do. But I'm very, very far away from where I can say that I'm very similar to Elon Musk.
No, I wouldn't ask you to do that, but I think you have some of the similar traits, and I think if he was on this call, he would probably ask you smarter questions to determine just how close you are to him. But having said that, it seems to me that all the signals were there earlier in the conversation that you love packaging because it's opening your mind to lots of different businesses. What
That's
happened there?
right.
Is that your dog, Kevin?
That's a Labrador joining in the conversation.
Right. Okay. So we mentioned Elon Musk and he starts growling. What's going on? But right. But for me, I think that the opportunity for for your growth, it literally could go anywhere because you have that ability to sort of see growth opportunity in anything that you're involved in.
I
Would you
agree.
mum say that about you?
I think so. You know, I think she's proud, and she now understands what I'm building. But for the longest time, she didn't understand. You know, I was supposed to be working a regular job. I was studying to be a doctor. That didn't go out well.
Yeah, but Well, yeah, I think you could help a lot of doctors. That's another story,
Certainly.
but I think you could definitely do that. But you have an amazing business, and it's packingduck.com. So that's if you're English, just lose the C. So PAKING duck.com, and you're going to find the opportunity to work with Jason, and the businesses that he the packaging business that he represents. Jason, thank you for joining Kevin and I on the next 100 Days podcast.
Gosh, Graham, what a man.
Yeah.
I think he's got the world in front of him. World's his oyster.
Yes, I think he has. I think he's got so many things going on.
Yeah.
And but I think the packaging thing, fascinating. Fascinating. And he could probably help lots of businesses in a way. I didn't realize just how potentially beneficial it could be to deal with somebody like this. As opposed to perhaps a local solution. And I just think it's something worth exploring. Might not be, but you never know.
I've had my eyes open a little bit as well to the possibility of somebody who is not in China, not resident in China, owning not 100% of a factory out there, but a good proportion of a factory out there.
Yeah, and how did he do it? By helping them expand their horizon. That was very smart of him. Well, I don't know about you, Kevin, but Jason Wong has been an absolutely tremendous guest. Lots of, to say he's so young, he's got so much done, and he'll have a lot more to do. And I'd be happy to work alongside him a little bit, just to make that happen. But today I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.